My words to you were, if Leinster left...
If they left the field, Toulon still wouldn't win.
Still wouldn't win. And as I looked up, there was another try coming. I thought, oh my goodness, I think I've spoken too soon.
Jalibert made 20 carries, mate. 20 carries for a fly-off. It's insane.
And the stats don't even tell the whole number because it's the feel exactly. And the appreciation and the willingness to back himself.
Hey, Sid, you must never write off the Argentinians, man. You know, us South Americans...
Investec Champions Cup semi-finals, the genius of Jalibert.
Yo.
The only thing that I felt was more impressive than Jalibert was the French broadcasters and their lack of replays. Whoever was commentating with that English accent was most offended. That was definite headshot, head to head. Where? No headshot here, mate.
What are you talking about?
The TMO can only rule on what he gets given. Ben Whitehouse could only rule on what he's given. And in this context, it was nothing that involved a French head on anything that resembled a Bath head. I thought it was glorious.
It was amazing, right? It really brings out the, like, when you play in France, you can't win in France thing, right? Like the whole home and away thing with rugby. It kind of adds to that whole tradition. I think, like I've always said, mate, I think once you create the monster, you can't kind of, like, apologize for it. So... I think if it was up to me, mate, and we've said this a million times, the refs make the calls, keep the TV guys out of it.
Well, again, every incident that it's been referred to, the referee was in real time, as it happened, he was looking straight at it and deemed it was sufficient to continue play. And with the greatest respect to every hit, the bloke who was on the receiving end got up and made about 6 meters every time on the carry. So I love the fact that there were minimal disruptions because totally. The broadcaster wouldn't give any.
Yeah, exactly. The less the better.
I say well done to the broadcaster.
Spot on, mate.
Was that Canal Plus? I say well done to them for just saying it's all up to the referee. He makes his call on the day. But what a wonderful finish to a weekend that for me was so enjoyable because there was no anxiety about would a South African team lose, how they're going to play. It was just... sitting back and as a neutral, really enjoying two very contrasting semi-finals, the one in Dublin and then the one in Bordeaux. I'd called 20 points to Leinster. No problems. At 29-11, I thought, on the money. You kept on saying to me, there we go, they got 10 minutes. They're coming back, Toulon. They nearly did. And then I had 12 to 15 Bordeaux, and they were kind of probably worth 20, let alone 12. They won by 12.
Yeah.
But comfortable winners. And I think Bordeaux, the best team in the competition for me. But if there's one team that can trouble them, it's got to be the Irish 15, also known as Leinster.
Yeah, exactly.
In a final, to make it a final.
Which actually brings me to my question, mate. If Bordeaux played Test rugby, where would they be ranked in the world, in your opinion?
Well, probably one below France. Probably fifth.
Yeah.
Because it's just not the same.
I don't know. Maybe they beat France, mate. They're pretty damn good.
Well, they beat Toulouse, so you could say they beat France, eh?
Indeed.
So, no, it's just that I think right now they're the best club team in the world. And I felt that the day I was sitting at Loftus in the first round and Jalibert was dancing through myself and 7,000 spectators. Jalibert was dancing through that Bulls defense like it was a game of Sunday touch. Louis Bielbergi was charging down the left flank and scoring tries. And they won 46-33. After the Bulls were actually ahead at halftime, didn't score a point in the second half. And then Maxime Luku at 9. Incredible kicking game. Jalibert on twinkle toes. And that and a strong pack. And that's been kind of their formula all the way through in the round robin. They were unbeaten. Obviously won the last 16, won the last 8, and won the semi-final. All of them comfortably. And resisted Toulouse in the first 30 minutes, resisted Bath in the first 30 minutes. They're a bloody good side. And they've picked their best team in this competition every weekend. And that's why they're unbeaten. And they're going to be in the final in Balboa on the 23rd of May. Deservedly so.
Do you think Leicester can be... I mean, you said it, but do you think... What are the odds of Leinster beating Bordeaux?
Well, Leicester have got no price. They're not there, okay? I'll give you a view on that on the 20th of May.
Okay.
Because who knows what happens in 3 weeks up north. But I love Bordeaux. I love watching Bordeaux. They're my favorite team outside of the Stormers and the Bulls.
They go well with cheese, mate. They go well with cheese. Yeah.
No, they're great. They've got such a good pack. They have halfbacks who just understand the game.
Well, that's the thing. It's those halfbacks, mate.
And they appreciate that a kick is as effective as an offload, as effective as a long kick, as a short kick, as a kind of carry. They just read the game. They play such intelligent rugby, and they remind me of that great All Black side between 2011 and 2015. They remind me of the Springboks because the Springboks play in a very similar way where we have the game breakers through the Colbys of the world and the Sashes, but we also know it all starts up front and defense. And one of the biggest things that defines this Bordeaux team is their defense. Just like the great Crusaders sides, the great Bulls team, All Black Springboks, their defense, they score wonderful tries and people remember them for that.
Yep.
But a lot of it is born out of their defense is so outstanding and they scramble so well.
Yeah. No, I mean, Bordeaux, it's a bit like a Formula One team. Like, you can have a great car, but if you don't have a good driver, you're not going to get the best out of that car, and obviously vice versa. And I think Bordeaux have got both elements of that. They've got a great pack of forwards that can get you go forward. You talked about the different departments in their game. Their defense is outstanding. And in Jalibert and Maxime Luku, they've got, I think, arguably the best halfbacks as a combination out there. And they just drive that pack down the field, whether it's finding kick space, taking great options on attack, and then helping to organize the backfield for kick receipt. I think they're outstanding. So very well-balanced team, match power with elusiveness, and have got a real solid edge to them.
And have consistently for the last 2 years been the best team in the competition. And here, to the South African naysayers, in a one-off game, our best teams are right up there with these best teams. We saw the Stormers should have beaten Toulon at the Stade Mayol. They scored, deemed to be held up. They lose by a point. Toulon go to Glasgow and they knock over the Warriors, where the Bulls have gone to Glasgow and knocked over the Warriors. Toulon are a pass, a miracle pass away from potentially producing one of the greatest comebacks in the last 10 minutes to beat Leinster in Dublin at the Aviva Stadium. The Bulls historically have gone to Dublin and beaten Leinster. Leinster have come here to South Africa in a semi-final and got caned. And then you look at Bordeaux. It was at the start of a season. The Bulls were in absolute disarray, but they still managed to score 33 points against this Bordeaux side. Yes, they shipped 46, most of them in the second half. But if you were to say to me the Bulls or the Stormers in a one-off game, they certainly, they would be a bit like Bath. They wouldn't be out the picture, but they don't have the depth of a side like Bordeaux. And they obviously don't have the continuity and just some of the class players. But we're not that far off in this country. It would be greater depth to our squads. And as Bath showed, Bath were the EPCR champions last season. And it was EPCR champions up against the Investec Champions Cup champions. It's a rarity. And for a good hour, they pushed them. But you always felt Bordeaux had that extra gear. And they were going to score that definitive seven-pointer. And at that level, Zells, you know better than most. Everyone has five chances. Some score once and some score five. And Bordeaux's that team.
Yep.
They had 38% possession in that game. And they scored five tries, could have scored another two, and were comfortably up at 38-19 when it went to 80 minutes. A late consolation for Bath.
Ruthless. Absolutely ruthless, mate. And I think you felt like Bath were playing above their level to try and keep pace with Bordeaux. And it was almost like watching a long-distance runner, like just pacing himself for the run and somebody trying to keep up with him. You could see they're breathing heavier, trying to keep pace. But when you get into that final straight, you just know that seasoned team, which is Bordeaux, just going to open their stride and gas it to the finish line. I thought Bordeaux were outstanding. And I think that Bath is trending towards that direction. Like, Van Kraan is building that team to be like Bordeaux. They're not quite there yet, but those pieces are starting to fall into place. And you've got to tip your hat to what Van Kraan's done and achieved at Bath in such a short space of time. To be in contention for a Champions Cup final, stopped by a team like Bordeaux, the hottest club team in recent years, and already have done the double, is something to really appreciate.
Now, he's been brilliant in how he's rebuilt and Bath restored that pride.
Yeah.
It was in the city of Bordeaux where they won their only Investec Champions Cup back in the 97-98 season. They beat Brive back in the day. It was Auckland Blues and Brive were the two big teams, 96-97. Things have changed remarkably in that time. But going back to that match statistics, and I talk about what a lot of people will see is the highlights package, and it's the five great tries, and we talk about Jalibert, and we're going to talk about him a bit more, and Bilberry, and all the rest. But if you look at the match statistics on the EPCR's homepage, for me, it made for remarkable reading. They had 38% possession, which gave Bath 62% possession, so we can count to 100. Bordeaux made 18 line breaks and 18 offloads. Bath made 5 line breaks and 7 offloads. Bordeaux beat 35 defenders to Bath's 21. They made 474 attack meters to Bath's 420. And then the most telling statistic for me, Bordeaux made 198 tackles.
Mm-hmm.
And their back three made 50 between them. They missed 21. Bath made 80 tackles and missed 35. Now, 18 line breaks, 18 offloads, and you make 198 tackles. And you're 38-19 up when the hooter sounds. That tells you about the balance in a team. Eh?
Yeah. Yeah.
And with 38% of possession, they kicked the ball 26 times. And with 62% possession, Bath kicked the ball 30 times.
Mm. Bath did a great job of retaining their kicks. They put them up and they retained them. Bordeaux relied on a distance kicking game that kind of forced Bath to execute that kick and catch more often. But I think as much as that kick and catch was good, I kind of think Bath sort of stuck with that and fed Bordeaux's defense. At some point there, Bath needed to turn those catches into effective carries, into line breaks. And obviously, that's where they struggled. The defense just denied them. So they had two-thirds of the plan in place. They just couldn't convert that into a real scoring opportunity. And every time that Bordeaux got anywhere within striking distance, they scored. I think their average points per entry was something like 3.2 or 3.5 or something. They were right up there. So, yeah, extremely effective. You just got to find a way to break down. I mean, everything always comes back to momentum. You know, you've got to be able to stop that other tight five, whether it's at set piece, whether it's in the collisions. You've got to be able to dominate there. And I think everything trickles down from there. And that's where Bordeaux are so tough. And as soon as they get that momentum, they're not handing the keys over to two teenagers to drive the car in. You've got Luku and Jalibert, who are past masters, who really make the most out of that possession. Whether it's, like I say, to turn you with kicks, to cut you on attack, they get that whole team going forward. It's brilliant.
Now, if you're a data man, crunch the numbers, you're a coach, you get a return like this from Jalibert. A match high 139 attack meters. Henry Arundel at 74, but in the Bordeaux side, next best was Damien Penno, 45. And I think he made most of those 45 in creating the first try when he made a great break. 4 offloads, 5 line breaks, 20 carries, 16 passes, 9 kicks. He beat 8 defenders and he made 9 tackles.
Yeah.
That was his contract. And he was close to scoring 2 incredibly potent individual tries. That was his contribution over 80 minutes as a 10. Luka did all the goal kicking. He banged over 5 conversions, the penalty. It's just...
Jalibert made 20 carries, mate. 20 carries for a fly-off. It's insane.
It's remarkable. And the stats don't even tell the whole number because it's the feel exactly. And the appreciation and the willingness to back himself. And that's... where I go back to, we have a Jalibert and Sasha, Feinberg and Gomazulu. Let him back himself. He's going to make mistakes. Jalibert's, when he does that little chip kick and he gathers, it's a 7-pointer. When he does it, they're under pressure.
Mm.
But they scrambled and they kind of protected their line. Their scrambling defense was brilliant. So, and then you look at Woki and the rest of that back row. I mean, just power. Cameron Woki. I mean, yep. 50 tackles between the three of them.
No, it's insane, mate. I mean, I'm just looking at the tackle count here. Cameron Waki, 16 tackles. Gazzotti, 16. And Bokaton, 18.
And the lock, Adam Coleman, 21 tackles.
Straight in there, yeah.
You know, Woki, 7 lineup. They were 100% in their lineup.
Yeah.
7 and 3. Woki took 3. 7 and Coleman took 3. That was their primary lineup jumpers. They disrupted the Bath lineup from set phase. If you don't have a lineup that's functioning, you're in trouble.
Big time.
I just thought it was such a quality comprehensive win given the quality of the Bath team.
Yeah.
And the way they've dominated in English, in the English Premiership, the depth that Johan van Graan has built, the confidence that they've got, that incredible comeback to beat Northampton Saints to qualify. It had to take, I said, Bath are a very good side, but it had to take an exceptional side to beat them the way they did.
How much different do you think it would have been if they'd played this game in Bath?
I think it would have been probably close to a one score, like a 7-pointer. Mm. But I think Bordeaux, like the quality Bull sides, the quality Crusader sides, and that's kind of our biggest reference point in terms of success in Super Rugby, and you look back to the original Auckland Blues, they were good enough to go away and win finals away from home.
Mm.
I think Bordeaux is a side, and they went and they beat Bristol. After they put 60 points on the Bulls, we thought, wow, they went to Bristol and won quite comfortably, not necessarily on the scoreline, but in the context of the game.
Mm.
The way they wore down Toulouse in that first half and then beat them in the quarterfinal, that's a wonderful side, Toulouse. And the way they came to Loftus and the exhibition they put on, being 33 points conceded in the first 40 minutes at altitude against a team loaded with Springboks, they may have been in disarray from a coaching point of view in terms of the structure, and Akers had just come in, but that takes a quality side that knows how to win away from home. And on neutral ground, it's going to be a fascinating contest because Leinster has the pedigree. The question marks there are some of their players, maybe they're not 2023 Leinster.
Mm.
So they've got the pedigree, but are they good enough to go to a neutral venue and knock over a side like Bordeaux? And I mean, that's going to be something we're going to talk about over the next 2 weeks. But yeah,
you know what I really liked about the Bordeaux performance? And it talks to like, the power is obvious in Bordeaux, but the decision-making, for me, is outstanding. Like, Rayasi, the fullback, is a hell of an electric player. If you had to sort of pin it down to one thing, you'd say he's really dangerous in space. A guy can hurt you with his feet and his speed. And towards the end of that game, Bordeaux are on the attack. Tamafuna's come on. He's making a big carry 5 meters from the line, and they get the ball turned over. And Bath hack it downfield. It's a great kick. It goes all the way downfield into the Bordeaux 22. And the Oaks are out on their feet. They're tired. So everybody's basically 75%ing it back to get to the ball. And Rayasi's the first one there. The chase is probably a good 10 meters behind him, Carreras. And the ball's inside the 5 meter channel. And instinctively, I think the crowd is thinking at this moment that the fullback's going to pick it up and play it inside to Pinau, including Pinau. Damien Pinau thinks he's going to get the ball. And Rayasi just hoofs the ball into touch. And Pinar's distraught, like, oh, why did you pass me the ball? And Rayasi just shakes his head. And Carreras is clapping, yes, you know, we got you to kick it out. It's going to be our attacking line-out now. And true as nuts, Bath don't win the line-out. Bordeaux carry the ball up. The ball carrier's held up. They drive that oak. The whole team piles in. They drive him up. And eventually the ball doesn't come out, and a scrum is awarded to Bath on the 10-meter line. And just that sort of like, your natural instincts kick in those moments, I think. And I think more expansive teams, more gambling teams would have had a go there. Rayasi picks the ball up, plays Pinar. He does a bit of a step. Maybe he has a go. Maybe he looks to exit. Maybe he kicks it downfield. And Bath are there in a position now of a transition again or a kick return opportunity. And I just thought the way he backed his set piece there. Basically, it was a massive vote of confidence in the forwards. Like, look, I'll back our defensive line out here. Something good will happen. I'll back our defense. I think that is a great reflection on their plan and their coaching.
But even early in the first half, they're probably on their own 10-meter line. He's heavily involved in an attacking move and that breaks down. Bath get the ball, turn it over with a big kick. He's the one who scampers back and he marks the ball and slows it all down and kicks it back 40 meters into touch and says, let's contest the line if we can and let's start again. Yeah, just their decision-making by and large is just so calm and clear, and it starts with that little general at 9. And we've always seen, I think what I love about the Investec Champions Cup is you really get an appreciation of these French players who are not necessarily starting options for the French national side, and then you start asking why.
Yeah.
And then you think, okay, Romain Intermac from Toulouse is the 10. Antoine Dupont is the 9. Toulouse primarily where Gaultier has gone for the bulk of his side. It becomes like a Stormers Bulls kind of mix in this country when people say, oh, but the best guy's actually up north, not down south. We get an appreciation just of the strength of French rugby through who's not necessarily 1 to 15 in the starting lineup there. Mm. Because any other team in the world, if they had the likes of a Luku and a Jalibert, who's not necessarily their starting 9 and 10, is their second choice 9 and 10.
Yeah.
And then you got like a Leclerc, you got a Surin, Baptiste Surin. So that's four just scrum-offs that you think at any given day could comfortably start a test match. I mean, they do have quality.
Big time.
At the moment. Big I would time. Say France and South Africa, when it comes to depth, and they've got some more quality in certain positions we've got in others. There's no other two nations, New Zealand included at the moment,
definitely,
that has the quality of French players and South African players when it comes to the Springboks and who you can select from.
No, I agree 100% with that. Watching a bit of Super Rugby this weekend, you know, I've been all about Tava Tava, Nawai, whatever, and Rennie, you know, finding, unearthing these blokes who are going to do great things, and just watching Super Rugby again at the weekend. There's moments, there's flashes, but the conditioning is not there. The defense doesn't kind of give the guys the test that confirms these guys can live up to that standard at international level. He's going to have his work cut out. I've got no doubt if anybody can do it, Rennie can do it, but he's going to have his work cut out for him.
But then even going there, you think like, and I read obviously on social media, and everyone's picking their, this is how they think Rennie's going to think, which I also wonder is a bit odd. You know, he's been out of the country for 9 years. Maybe he's going to think a bit differently. And it's going to be all change and reward for form, et cetera, et cetera. And we've always known in those competitions, some of the test players do come back near the business end of a competition. All of a sudden, they're the ones who make the mix. But through all the debate, people are starting with their selections, and I start reading. Fullback, Jordy Barrett. Win, Caleb Clark. Win, Will Jordan. Centers, Quinn. 10, Bowden Barrett. 9, Roygaard. Okay, what's changed?
Same team.
Then we go into Pack. Is Sevier captaincy material? Is he good enough to start? Well, he is the only one who's captaincy material, and he's your best forward. Okay. Yeah. Then, or should we give it to Cody Taylor? Like, where are these new names that are playing in all the five franchises? You know, so it's kind of like,
yeah,
I think he's got to come in and just say, I'm rewarding form, and I'm picking four or five guys that you may not be familiar with if you're not watching Super Rugby, but I think they form players. Otherwise, it's back to...
The cool thing about Rennie is that he has a vision about how he wants to play. And probably more than that, I think, the kind of player he wants in terms of their character and their personality. That edge that Rennie gets in his teams is because he picks players who are edgy. He doesn't take Oaks who are librarians and turn them into alley thugs. He picks alley thugs. And so I think that's where the newness is going to come, is he's not going to be evaluating a guy on catch and pass only. He's going to be saying, is this Oak going to stare down Eben Etzebeth, hypothetically, you know? Is he going to mix it with those guys in the trenches? So I think that's where you're going to start to see some change. That's where there'll be a variance. And people may say, oh, why are you picking this guy? He wasn't in form. Well, I'm picking him because he's going to punch someone. I don't know, you know?
And I watched their big game, okay, and it was obviously Hurricanes at home against the Crusaders, 38-31. Some wonderful individual play. No one is for one moment disputing the skill sets of these guys in Super Rugby. Mm. But it comes back to the two sets of forwards up against each other, the intensity at the breakdown, the collisions, and, you know, there was that rave match that everyone was talking about when the Chiefs knocked over the Hurricanes 22-17, golden point, the kind of the fluke kick from Damian McKenzie, and they got the win. But it was like, wow, did you see that intensity? Did you see the way this was like test match stuff? They're doing that once every six games. When the Investec Champions Cup, for the most, it's happening every time
every in a playoff time, game. Yep.
In the big URC games, it's happening.
True.
It's more test kind of rugby that you've seen than this just out-and-out skill.
Mm.
And the nuances of the game have never changed. And I keep on going back to the great Hurricanes backline that had Nonu, Umanga, Christian Cullen, Jonah Lomu. They won nothing because they didn't have a pack. And it all starts and finishes with your pack. And that's why I keep on going back to a side like Bordeaux, is they do have the pack. And they've got a pack as good as any out there. And no one pack is ever going to dominate them. You may have parity, but you're not going to dominate them. The question mark around Leinster, obviously, is do they have the set piece when it comes to the scrum, not the line-out? And can they be upset? Because then all the attacking players go out the window if they don't have that rhythm and they don't kind of have that quick ball that's coming from a very, very strong set piece and then kind of quick recycle ball.
Mm.
Bordeaux do that. They can rely on their set piece. They certainly can rely on their halfbacks, game breakers, and when they've got to basically scramble and just defend for 10, 15 minutes. They do it. I like the Springboks do it, like that great All Black side did it. And people talk about the 2019 World Cup win, the 2023 World Cup win. It was born out of defense.
Mm.
The way South Africa defended that line 7 minutes before halftime and conceded a penalty and the score was 6-3. England in that first 20, 30 minutes of that World Cup final would have gone up by 20 points against most teams. New Zealand would have blown some, they'd just blown Argentina away by 40-odd points, beaten Italy by 90 points. They were limited to one try over 80 minutes against us in that final. And Bordeaux are the same. They score more points than you do, and that's good enough for them. But when they have to in those critical phases, in terms of minutes and field position,
yeah,
they bring out the defensive clutch plays.
No, they do. I mean, you're talking about defense. Leinster have got a guy who coaches defense there. It's not too bad, Jacques Linaba. He kind of knows his way around that department. I thought Leinster were very clever against Toulon because Toulon's hot streak has come from them just physically manhandling Oaks in contact, led by David Ribbons. And I thought Leinster did a great job in their attack plan of taking Ribbons out of the mix at the collision point with those little tip passes. They just moved it one pass beyond him, so Ribbons was on the inside thinking he was about to make a smash tackle and suddenly he's having to catch up and fold again. I thought they did a great job sort of getting momentum like that. But Leinster will have a different kind of challenge because the attack isn't, I mean, it's got to go around some big bodies, but it's also got to take into account that any transition, you know, Bordeaux's back three will slice and dice you to pieces. Whereas maybe Toulon, that was slightly less of a factor than BLBRE, you know, Penau, those guys. So, look, both teams are going to have to be on point. I think both teams defensively will be very good. I think the team that can get momentum on attack is going to be the most dangerous team. And so I think the onus there is more on Leinster, that their plans kind of do get around Bordeaux. I'm not sure they have the same power element as Bordeaux will have. I think Bordeaux can probably play a slightly more conservative game and still get gain line, where Leinster, I think they have to be cleverer than you. And in these tight finals, I think that that probably tips it towards Bordeaux. I mean, my money would be on Bordeaux anyway. But I'm just thinking around those departments, that would be my thinking.
If you look at a side like Leinster, and the big difference about their campaign this year, is, and we spoke last week when I did chat to Jacques Nienhaber, and he said, I'd rather be like 16 from 16 in the URC than at that stage it was 10 from 15. And then they lost to Benetton that weekend. And I'd rather we really cruise through every match and not have to rely on an 80th minute penalty or 78th minute penalty. But what makes them dangerous is they've had to fight to get to every round. And that's not the Leinster that's had to do that in the past. And they've come unstuck in finals. I mean, this is their fifth final in the last 6 years, I think it is. They're chasing that fifth star. They're going to be bloody dangerous.
They're going to be very dangerous.
And they're doing it tough. And what I did enjoy about watching that Toulon game, and I take the Toulon game against the Stormers, and I know you guys analysed Toulon to death, and then at the end of the game in the post-match, Dobbo said he knows that defence just wasn't up to scratch in the first 30 minutes at the Stade Mayol. The Stormers very tight, very narrow, maybe too passive in the way they're allowed Toulon space to attack, and then got beaten by the pass or got beaten by individual skill. I just felt in that first 60 minutes especially, that famed Bok rush defense that Jacques Nienaber takes with him anywhere, and I think fitness-wise and conditioning, they could execute that. There was just no time and no space for that Toulon attack, and they struggled. So one, they were struggling at the scrums. They didn't get that initial dominance they thought they would against them. So you say, at the contact areas, they took their main guy out. So a very clever approach. But I thought they were so on point defensively. They hurried and rushed. A Toulon side that for the last probably 6 weeks have started to become used to playing with rhythm and beating teams that were tight and narrow, not teams that were aggressive and in their face. And it really was like watching the box play against the All Blacks in that first hour, where you think this side's got such a potent attack, but they're just not going to get it right because it was just 150 miles an hour, and they kept that line. I mean, they all kept their line when they kind of, and that was with Robbie Henschel getting knocked out.
Another safe low tackle by Robbie Henschel, gone.
Yeah, shame. Low tackle, and he's knocked out cold. The craziness, and I know we're bouncing around, but in that rule is, had he been AD being kind of the attacker.
If he'd had the ball in his hands, the other guy goes off.
The other guy goes off. I mean,
nah.
If they were applying the rules, then they should have sent him off.
Exactly. Exactly. He put himself in danger.
Yeah, it was just, it's crazy. I mean, and we keep on talking about how poorly these things have been applied with the head contacts. I mean, Luka's head on the number eight is not going to cause much damage. That was a lot more dangerous. A knee to the back, falling on Ethan Hooker's shoulder is far more dangerous than everyone. Maybe that's what that French broadcaster thought.
Yeah,
it's just a kiss. Let's move on. Okay?
It's just a kiss.
They got that on Getty Images of the glance of a very small nine up against a big number eight. But people were saying he should have been sent off for that. I have trouble all the time.
Don't send anyone off, mate. Penalties and sanctions. People didn't fly off across the world to watch 13 versus 15.
Something like that, yeah. Exactly. So I think the right results from both matches in terms of a final and a contest. And I think on pedigree and history, Leinster are in the top two, and on form, Bordeaux is the top team.
No, definitely. I agree 100% with that. I think you'd be foolish. As much as I think Bordeaux have the firepower to do it, I don't think going front door against Leinster is a great idea. I would definitely engage in the kicking game against Leinster and see whether we can get an opportunity for a guy like Bielbieri to have a run back and a little bit less of a structured sort of transition attack opportunity. I'm sure they've got all of those plans already nailed down. It's going to be a cracking final.
And then you look at a guy like Rico Ioane, and he hasn't been a Jordy Barrett for Leinster. He's playing his best position, which is left wing, not 13. But his work rate off the ball, his involvements, when you look at his stats return, his carry meters, and he made the decisive tackle. He doesn't make that tackle on Darren. It could be the miracle offload, and they're under the sticks, and they win that game 32. They win their game 32-29 in the most incredible way.
What an epic result that would have been.
And you would have called it, because you kept on saying to me on the WhatsApp in the last 10 minutes, it's coming, it's coming. I said to you, if they, my words to you were, if they left
the field now, Toulon still wouldn't win.
Still wouldn't win. And as I looked up, there was another try coming. I thought, oh my goodness, I think I've spoken too soon. But great result for Jacques Nienaber. He gets to another final in the Investec Champions Cup. He won the URC last season. So people who talk about, oh, he's given them an identity crisis, I don't know, he's not doing too shabby. He's got you to another final, and you're in contention. And who knows, you may even host playoffs when it comes to the URC.
But and just then, on Leinster there, mate, the fact that Leinster are into this final as the underdogs, like, I mean, people are already saying the Bath-Bordeaux game was the final, right? Like, that is a very dangerous Leinster position to be in. If you're Leinster, you're going into this thing, instead of having this pressure of like you've dominated in the URC, you've cleaned up everywhere you've played, you kind of, like you said, you had to get there the tough way. You took the hard route. It's been ugly. And now there are question marks over you going into a final which your club has won multiple times. I think that's massive.
And there could be even more question marks. They play the Lions in the URC this weekend. The high riding Lions. And that's going to be interesting, how they manage the Leinsters, manage the next 2 weeks in the URC, and how Ulster manages the URC, because Ulster's in the EPCR final on the Friday night, Challenge Cup final, and they play Montpellier. They haven't won a title for 18 years. They're potentially going to finish top eight in the URC. I don't see them winning the URC, Ulster. Yep. And is that the one that they then target? Because the Challenge Cup is massive for the teams up north. There may be a disregard in this country for what's the real significance if you don't win the Investec Champions Cup, but there is a significance.
Yep.
So the next fortnight's going to be crackers in the URC for our teams. But for now, Bordeaux, Leinster, in the Bordeaux setup, Heinie Adams, 60 matches for Bordeaux. He's one of the coaches. He played scrum off for South Africa as well. And then Sean Salby, 113 matches for Toulouse. Before that, 50 for Stade, and then played out his last season at Grenoble, 5, coached at Montpellier, at Biarritz. He's now a coach there. They've both been in France for the best part of 20 years. So as we say, proud South Africans, but very much converted Frenchmen. They're in there. Kalu Sadi, 51 minutes he played, starting at tight end, 17 tackles, 4 carries. Thomas the Tank, Detoy's tight end for Bath, played 73 minutes, 16 carries, the most by a Bath player, 8 tackles. So from a national Springbok perspective, Rassie will be saying that's great to see one of his regulars and one that's in his alignment squad to be playing at that level and playing so well. And then from a South African IP, the Van Graans, the Jacques Nienabers, the Heinie Adams, the Sean Salbys coming through, and then a Dave Ribbons, who has been a menace and been well eligible. We take a lot out of the Investor Champions Cup, even when we're not there as a South African club sides.
Absolutely. We put a lot in as well, mate. You've mentioned all the guys that are contributing there. It's great for South African rugby to have such a massive player base locally and abroad. Makes Rusty's job easier. He gets to see everybody playing. And when we play against the national teams, like we play against France, we've got guys who've been playing against those players in those leagues who're sitting in those team meetings week in, week out saying, this is how we're going to stop these guys. That's a massive shortcut to success, I think, which is obviously great for the Springboks.
All right. So we'll be talking more Investec Champions Cup rugby and EPCR Challenge Cup finals in the third week of May. As always, we do our Steco Hybrid Power Tool Hero of the Week. Zells, you're the one that always calls it. Andre the Giant will tell us all about it. Andre Estrades, and he is Steco's ambassador. But he's going to tell us about it at the end, because I really need you to tell us now, from everything you saw this weekend, who makes it?
Mama, there goes that man again. Ethan Adams, mate, for me. Yes! Okay, so the junior box beats Australia, mate. Last week, they beat Argentina. That bloke stepped a guy and then ran through four Argentina players to score a try. This week, he thought, you know what? I got to show Zales I'm not just a power guy. He gets the ball in the second half, 30 minutes to go, off the back of a line-out, runs into the vacuum, steps, I think it was the wing, the guy had scored a great try for Australia when they were down to 13 players, steps the winger, and then beats the last man with his feet. Nobody even laid a hand on him. I think he's 175 and 210 kilograms, and he just rounded Oaks with his feet. That is a proper, proper athlete there, doing great things.
And for the first time ever, and he hasn't even played a senior game of rugby, our Steco winner is a back-to-back winner.
Indeed.
It's Ethan Adams.
Yep.
And the only reason we're not going with Jalibert, because he's not a Joubert. He's French and he's not South African.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, he was phenomenal, mate. Absolutely phenomenal. And I think if you want your kid to be a good rugby player, name him Ethan, mate. Ethan Hooker. Ethan Van Bullion at Stellenberg, I think it is. You know, you've got a great Ethan Bester, backup hooker at the Sharks. It's happened. Ethan Hunt saved the world a few times.
And if you want him to be a movie star, know that he comes from the Adams family.
There you go, mate.
Some players choose a side. They've always said a back can never be a forward. But with Steco, Ryobi didn't just reinvent the rules. It changed the entire game. Hybrid tools for a hybrid craftsman. Steco, shaping the future. 40 years of Ryobi credibility.
Okay, so now, Ethan Adams. Can he transfer that form into senior rugby? I mean, he's running over these guys like Jonah Lomu type. But there's some big boys in professional rugby. Is he good enough to?
I mean, who knows, mate?
Is he good enough to make that transition?
For me, I've seen lesser players do very, very well. So I would not be at all surprised to see Ethan translate that to the pros. He may have to like pick his battles a bit more wisely. Obviously, you can't run over everybody at the top senior level. But I certainly think he is a problem in contact. I love those dumpy, explosive inside centers. Like Laumape was one of those guys. Tava Tava Nawai is another one of those guys. I love those guys that are low to the ground, low center of gravity, hard to bring down. You can't go high anymore because you'll get sent to the cooler. How do you go low on a guy who's, you know, wider than he is tall and get him down? I think he's an absolute gain line asset. And the fact that he says he's modeled his game on Nonu and Dukes puts him in good company, mate. So I think he's got a very good chance.
And just someone asked me this question over the weekend, talking about Ethan Adams. And look, at schools ever, it's been him and Marcus Miller that have just dominated every school's report in the last 2 years. Marcus Miller and Ethan Adams went in this pre-warm-up game. They went to Georgia. They hammered them there as well. But Marcus Miller not being involved because he was with the Stormers, do you think that's also allowed Ethan Adams to be the spotlight on him as opposed to a Marcus Miller?
Totally.
And he's flourished.
And I think they've done a great job at the junior box in making those selection calls, right? The fact that there's been this rotation, that there is no star guy, Marcus Miller doesn't just jet in, take his Stormers jersey off, put on his junior box jersey and start every game. I think it must give everyone in that group confidence. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing Marcus Jewell for these guys because I think he's going to do great stuff. But I think there's exactly what Rusty has done, where nobody is beyond being dropped. Nobody's, you know, too comfortable. I think that's a great environment to create for top high performance excellence from all your players. So I think Ethan has thrived in that. I don't think he needed an invitation, as you can see by his play. I mean, when you run over four players in the opening minute of a game, you know, you don't need too much help.
And then look at, I mean, Riley Norton's captaincy again, Paul Rees' product. I could have chosen to go into cricket, potentially into the IPL, captained at SA Schools, chose rugby, a lock. A lot of people say he could convert to a seven flanker, but the IQ, and I'm talking off the field from what I've seen in interviews, the way he conducts himself, the kind of rugby IQ he shows as a leader on the field, his graphs go in the right way. He's a Stormers, he's in the Stormers squad, Western Province player, captained the under-20s last year to the World Championship, said they had unfinished business in Sanzar at the Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium. They lost to this Australian side a year ago, not exactly the same one, but in the Sanzar competition. To go 48 unanswered points against Argentina, win 48-21, and then 56-17 against an Australia side when they went to the World Championships. They put 70 past them. An Australian side that was on their way to beating New Zealand. New Zealand lost to Argentina. So South Africa looks so much further ahead at under 20 level than the rest of their southern counterparts. And when they played in the World Championship, proved they were as good against the Northern Hemisphere teams.
Yeah.
That must be good for our rugby.
I mean, it would be impossible to argue against it. If you're looking from overseas and you're thinking, wow, these Springboks are a problem, they've got this massive depth going into 2023, and that's tapping into Dad's army, basically. They haven't even tapped into the middle tier. And then you look at the junior level and you see what Ethan Adams and these guys are doing, Riley Norton's doing, and then you start reading some school reports, you must think this production line is never, ever going to come to an end. So if you're going to try and attack South African rugby, you must have a very long-term plan, because there's a wealth of talent, and it's on a production line of a great pathway.
Well, when you look at our rugby at the moment, under 18 we dominant when we played in these international series. We know how strong our schoolboy structures are. We know how healthy our schoolboy rugby is. Under 20s, there's that continuity now. Dave Vessel's done an outstanding job at the high performance manager at SA Rugby. Kevin Foote's come back from Australia. They both cut their professional coaching teeth over in Australian Super Rugby. Came out of the UCT ranks as well in Varsity Cup. They've been outstanding with the junior rugby and with the women's rugby. Made it to a quarterfinal for the first time ever in a World Cup. Very much seen as a top eight team now, gunning for a top four under Swais De Bruin, a great international season. I think they play the Black Ferns here during the Rugby's Greatest Rivalry Series. They play, I think it's the USA, or they play England as well. And then you just look at the Springboks as well, and you look at the Stormers, one in URC, Lions three, Bulls in the top eight. It's just our game has, and you know, a week ago we said we are just simply the best, but our game is in such wonderfully good health.
Absolutely, mate. Great decisions at the top have facilitated that, right? The move from Super Rugby to the URC has been brilliant. The introduction of having to deal with the logistics of the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup, playing against the best teams in Europe, massive for us. And then I think Russie's fingerprints all over it, right? Like the junior pathways that he's been involved in since as far back as 2012 in setting those things up. Just the sort of evolution now of the junior box with Davey Vessels and Kevin Foote running the show there. Everything's just sort of kind of clicking, all moving in the right direction. So, again, it's taken years to build it. Now that it's been built and it's starting to bear fruit, I think it's going to be a hell of a tough to break that down for any rival nation.
And you talk about here, we're talking about the structures, our under 18s, under 20s, our URC teams, our BOC team. But half that, well, a good third of that BOC team sits in Japan at the moment, where they play in Japanese League One. And let's not forget about those guys, because in 2 months' time, they're going to be critical.
Back in the mix.
To us retaining the Castle Rugby Championship, being successful in the Nations Championship. I know that Chesson Colby's been doing a lot of kicking over there, scoring a lot of points.
Yeah.
Dukes, he's been doing well. Malcolm Marks, he's always doing well. I mean, who's been catching your eye from reports there from what you've seen?
Yeah, just keeping tabs on Japan League One from a very long distance away, mate. I see Chesson Colby, 12 points of the tee this weekend in a massive 92-point thriller, I think it was, in Toyotashi, in Aichi. Suntory Sun Goliath beat Verblitz, mate. I was there in Verblitz for a little bit with Jake. It's an interesting place to be in, and I think Suntory Sungalath are one of their main rivals. So great to see Chesson is in a 92-point thriller. He's put 12 points on the board with his boot, mate. That just goes to show the maturity of his game, I suppose. Probably working quite hard in try assists, but just saving himself for the box, mate. No try-scoring antics where he's getting chopped in half. He's feeding that to somebody else to go and finish off, and he's kicking the points, which is fantastic for us. Quagga Smith played at number 8 for the Blue Revs, mate. They went down 35-29, I think it was, to Brave Lupus in Tokyo. And then Malcolm Marks was on the winning side again. We had Kubota Spears 52-8 rout of the Black Rams, also in Fukushima, and Malcolm Marks was part of that. And then Jesse Creel scored a try for the Cannon Eagles. They beat Lucanio Arms' teammate. I think it's the Black Rams, if I'm not mistaken. No, Mitsubishi Dinobors. And Fuff the Clack obviously plays for Cannon Eagles with Jesse Creel. So those guys are all performing, man. I'm sure great bragging rights for Jesse Creel over Lucanio Arm. They would have had a chat and a Japanese beer afterwards, I'm sure.
But, I mean, just great to see our guys are performing there. And they have such pedigree over there, such reputations. And we talk about being ambassadors for the game. I mean, you couldn't ask more from double World Cup winners who are going there. They're not going there for payouts. They're not going there for an easy ride. They're there and they're improving their rugby. As every interview I read, they say they're kind of evolving as human beings. They come back to South Africa more rounded. And they certainly come back into that national setup seemingly more refreshed and ready to kind of put their bodies on the line, not exhausted from the physical exertion of playing in Europe, playing in the URC, playing in Investec Champions Cup or Challenge Cup. I mean, that's a physically demanding competitions. The Japanese League one, yes, there's physicality, but it's a lot more fast-paced, a lot more reliant on tempo. We're just in such a good space at the moment. Big and time. It's so lacquer and cool to be talking about it because both of us have been around long enough when we were 7th in the world. Jeez. We were taking 57-0 against the All Blacks in Albany, taking 57-15 in Durban the year before that, getting done by Italy, getting done by Wales 3 times in a row, getting done 38-3 in Dublin at Aviva against Ireland, getting knocked over at Twickenham.
But even before that, mate, we were the dumbest rugby nation. Remember when we were following everyone and trying to keep up, and why aren't we doing that? Other people were innovating. That's completely flipped around. Like, people are following South African rugby, and I think that's glorious.
Yeah, big, big, strong, as Rod McQueen once said to Harry Fillion, there's your Springbok team, the Water Buffalo, big, strong, and effing dumb. But we have evolved from that, and, yep. And Rusty's been at the forefront of what he's built around him. So we'll keep on trumpeting that. I'm, as I say, with great humility, not. I say it with just great gratitude to what Rusty's done from the top down, to the leadership all around in South African rugby. We've seen dark days in South African rugby. And it's wonderful to enjoy and to celebrate the good times. And there are so many good times. There's so many good times. It's like looking at Stellenberg High and what they've done. They won one defeat in 10 games. They knocked over Weinberg 38-10 over the weekend. The only game in the Western Cape. Hartsfontein, they won well. I mean, Hilton 22-9 against Michael House. Kez drew with Pearson 15. All there's just every province, there's good games going on and kind of cross-border when it comes to provinces. We're in a lacquer place. But I did get an interesting mail from someone. And he asked me, he tunes in every week. It's Sid from Baltimore in the States. And he wants you to know.
Sit down.
Yeah, and I said, you guys are getting a match. He's obviously going to the game. He said he tunes only for one thing, and it's been terrible. He hasn't heard Ricky, and he hasn't heard... Zeg, wat leest hier in, Sid? Je komt nou van Baltimore af. Als onze aankomst in Springbokke is 3-0 tegen de Kiwis, you can have that game. The series will be decided. En toen lag hij voor mij en zei, we willen weten, wat denkt Ricky van die Las Pumatikies? Die kleine mannetjes, hulle verloren nou tegen die bokkies? Maar dan geven we die Kiwis een beetje een pak sla. Wat is de regering van
hij? Hey, Sid, you must never write off the Argentinians, man. You know, us South Americans. We play with our hearts on our sleeves, you know? We never give up. So even though we got beaten like that by the Junior Springboks, we will be back. We will have the last laugh, hey? Enjoy it.
Maar wat zie je nog van die venten in New Zealanders? Eerst wat even weet.
Look, you beat the All Blacks. You are at the pinnacle of the junior rugby game in the world. We beat the future All Blacks, man. Nobody can ever take that away from us. We will enjoy it.
Well, do you see where Ricky is a bit outdated? Is the pinnacle is now green and gold. The Springboks. the junior box and the under 18.
Yes.
And that's what Argentina have to consistently look for. But well done to them for knocking over and putting another dagger into the hearts of the Kiwis. We know their sevens team's in a downward spiral. We know the under 20s haven't been very good. Long may it last for New Zealand rugby that they struggle. And long may it last for us that we add to their struggles.
Yepa!